Hello and welcome to the Beyond podcast. This special episode looking at some Dr. Faustus action. We're continuing our journey looking at the work of The Show Must Go Online and their month of Marlowe. Before we get to that interview, just a continuation of our plug for our Lord Mayor show recreation that we're producing in October. On October the 29th, we are going to be presenting a recreation of the 1621 Lord Mayor show. It's by Thomas Middleton. It is going to be quite silly, we hope, and hopefully we're going to have a lot of volunteers. We need people to dress up as green men or women, whifflers, as aldermen, and general Londoners. We need people to make noise and be the sounds of the city. One of the great things about Lord Mayor shows is almost inevitably nobody could hear a damn word. And we want to recreate that excitement live in the 21st century and the exact day 400 years after the event to see what comes out of it. We're going to be doing it several times across the day. There is a sign-up form that is available on the show notes. If you're available, you can come along and be involved or just watch. You know, you don't have to be involved. You can just stand in the back being miserable. That is perfectly allowed. Or, of course, you can follow the work online. We're going to try and archive and make sure everything is available in some form of digital world so that you can follow along with that activity. But enough of that wanton plugging. We're now going to go to our special guest to talk about, primarily Dr. Faustus, also plug for another one of the plays of Marlowe as well in the same season. So, without further ado, let me introduce, always let them introduce themselves, our wonderful guests. So, who are you and what is your purpose in life?
My name is Fergus Ratigan. I'm an Irish actor and director, and my purpose is to make good art.
And I am Emily Ingram. I'm a painfully English theatre maker based up in Scotland, and I'm part of the Show Must Go Online team. And the Show Must Go Online bring the works of, or in the lockdown in 2020, brought the works of a certain playwright who I don't think you'll have heard of on this podcast, to screens of people across the globe. They did the entirety of the first folio of this unknown playwright's work in 2020. And now they're starting to go, gosh, there's far more interesting playwrights in the early modern period, aren't there? And they're starting to explore works of playwrights like John Lilly and his play Galatea. And they're starting to also explore the works of one Christopher Marlowe. And that's what I'd really love to talk to you about today, Rob.
We'll talk about Dr. Faustus in a moment. Coming up in a few days' time, at the time this podcast goes out, is going to be Dido, Queen of Carthage, also by Marlowe. Are you able to tell us just a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So this production of Dido, Queen of Carthage is part of the Show Must Go Online's Month of Marlowe Festival. Last week on Wednesday, 9th, we had Edward II by Christopher Marlowe, and that is still watchable. If you get tickets for the entire festival, you can still retrospectively watch Edward II. I really recommend that you do because it's a wonderful cast and was directed by Kevin V. Smith, who was on this podcast just a little while ago. Now, Dido, Queen of Carthage is up next this Wednesday, which is Wednesday 16th of June, and that is directed by Show Must Go Online alumni Amelia Parillon. And through her production, she's uncovering the idea that love, war, asylum, all of these themes are not new, and she's taking a really timeless approach to the story of Dido, and she's describing it as a classic epic with a modern understanding, and I can't wait to see it. I got to sit in on the research and development process with her and her team, and they're just brimming with ideas and passion for the project, so I absolutely recommend tuning into that.
Excellent. So, I'm sure our listeners at home have a pretty good idea what happens in Dr. Faustus. It's quite a well-known story, but if you could just tell us a little bit about this version of the story, why Dr. Faustus, and also your individual hopes for the production, as it were. Obviously there's two of you, so I'm hoping you're in concert or working together, or maybe you're in constant battle forces between good and evil over which direction the show is going in.
I do fit on most people's shoulder.
which of you is the good angel and which of you is the bad?
Oh, she's definitely a good angel.
It's actually why we've come on the podcast, Rob. We were hoping at the end that you might be able to be some sort of adjudicator and let us know which was which. It's really the only reason we're here.
Well, hopefully we'll come to a conclusion by the end of the session. So, why Dr. Faustus?
Oh, always why not? Because Faustus is a wonderful, timeless legend. In that, you know, traditional story of the man who sells his soul for power and knowledge, that when is there not a time in everyone's life where there's not that moment of what of yourself are you willing to give up for? You know, every day everyone's tempted by something they want and how far they're willing to go for that. So this is that conflict that everyone can relate to. And also it's just a great and terrifying legend of, you know, the original Dr. John Faust from 1540 with Marlowe putting his own spin on it, which is terrifying and beautiful, and where we get a lot of these selling your soul tropes, like the angel and devil on your shoulder.
Absolutely. As Fergus says, it's a really old, basic story in some ways, but Marlowe really brings it to life with that. Is it Ben Jonson who describes Marlowe's prose as having the mighty line in it? Marlowe just absolutely brings that to life and does really exciting things with the story. Just in the few moments before I came on the podcast, Fergus and I have been talking about our directorial approach earlier in the afternoon, but it suddenly occurred to me that in some ways, and bear with me on this, both of you, in some ways it is quite an interesting play for a locked down world. I know some parts of the world are starting to open up right now, but the reason why I think it is so many people have been locked down very, very, very intensely with someone. And the relationship between Mephistopheles and Faustus is that very intensive thing over a long period of time. And I'm actually quite interested in exploring what that does to someone's psyche, being just so intertwined and in the pocket of someone for such a long time. And I'm starting to begin to think of it as a bit of a lockdown play in some ways. And this is me going completely off piece, having not discussed this with Fergus. So we'll see what he thinks.
But it's right. It is that we have these constant scenes of just Marlowe and Mephistopheles and Faustus trapped in a room with each other, just hashing out the mysteries of the universe, essentially, and what matters to their own souls. Or, well, whatever Mephistopheles has of a soul.
I suppose he's got to have something for him to be tormented about being cast out of not being in heaven. It's very much a two-hander core element to the play, is this relationship between the two characters. The wider world is sort of glimpsed in snatches, in comic set pieces, as well as very serious ones. How do you feel about the difference between that sort of inner world and outer world?
I feel like the outer world, you have to have, and we do, you have to have a strong enough cast and a strong enough aesthetic for the world outside to make it a genuine question as to which Faustus should be choosing. Because if you just have this incredibly charismatic Mephistopheles and wonderful, wonderful magic, then there's not quite the tension that there needs to be. Yes, there's a tension over Faustus' soul, but you don't create the stakes that the audience needs. So you have to have this wonderful supporting cast and this genuinely compelling mundane world. I use mundane not in the sense of boring, but in the sense of non-magical world as well. And we're so lucky with the supporting cast we have that they're going to be able to bring that to life so beautifully and so charismatically.
There is always advantages and disadvantages to doing things text like this on Zoom. Are you finding that doing something with the potential effects possibilities helping for magic or getting in the way?
Definitely helpful. Like it was one of the reasons why this was show we can start doing, because there are so many aesthetic tricks you can do. Without giving too many spoilers, there are various magical tricks that Faustus does at points that are so much better. Like at one point he mutes someone, which, you know, thankfully you can do with a nice little button here at the bottom of the screen. So it's very handy. It's, you know, that you can create, you can transform people's appearances, you can change spatial relationships much more than you can in a theatre in some ways.
And the other thing is it's far easier to stunt double on Zoom than it is in a stage play. Obviously on film you've got the trickery of the camera, but in a stage play it kind of has to be that actor doing it. And, you know, with some of the magical effects or gore effects, we can't ask the actors to set their skin on fire or, you know, get a knife, but we can, you know, do gore effects. We can get the very best special effect artists that we've got available to us in to do that and sort of cheat it so the audience thinks they're seeing Andrew Mockler, our Faustus, doing whatever gory things to himself when actually, you know, we're keeping Andrew perfectly safe and our stunt doubles safe as well.
You mentioned transformations. Of course, some transformations differ between the different texts because there isn't the Dr. Faustus to work from. You can open box number A or box number B. And which text do you prefer, or have you made some choices of an amalgam between them?
We've very much made an amalgam. Essentially, it's literally the A and B text, the 1604 quarto and the 1616 one, that we've taken largely the verse structure from the second one, but the plot points and the speed from the first one and amalgamated them and twisted a few things as well to give the audiences a few surprises as well. But it's nicely streamlined the story and made it very energetic and quite pacey, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yes, the 1604 is significantly shorter than the 1616.
Yes, 1616 would be quite close to 3.5 hours, I'd say, by modern standards. This show will not be 3.5 hours, so hopefully it should be a little under two.
Yeah, it's. I've always found it fascinating that it's not just the number of words, but also the pace of the way the language flows. You could never wholly predict how long a play is going to be just by looking at the word count, because word counts lie, because sometimes the words want to be slow and Faustus varies, because obviously we have certain set speeches or certain elements that want to be incredibly slow and then elements that want to gallop along.
And also from the minute Faustus sells his soul, spoiler alert, the clock is ticking, so we need to create that time pressure on the audience. And for them to feel it's running out of, you know, we hope by the end of it, the audience are begging for more of his story. Mm. But time will run out.
Indeed. And talking of time, you don't have a huge amount of time in terms of rehearsal and production for this. We're at time of recording a little way out. How far are you in the production process in terms of casting, rehearsing, all of the things? How's it going?
So on Monday, we will meet our actors and it will be 9 days until the show goes up, and we will be rehearsing with them in the evenings and we'll be rehearsing with them on the weekends, and then we'll be doing the tech run, we'll be doing the dress run, and we'll be putting it up in front of an audience. So really, it is quite a condensed rehearsal process, which in some ways is quite similar to how original practice might have been at the time Marlowe was working. Actors, we suspect, didn't have terribly much time to create these shows. We'll call it
close to original practice.
Yes, original practice, we'll call it that.
How much room for manoeuvre do you have in rehearsals in terms of things you've decided in advance that you know have to stay, or how much do you give and take expect to have from actors from experience of previous productions?
I very much want to see what the actors bring and then see how they express it. Obviously, I don't want them straying too far from the text or at all from the text. But if they bring a completely different interpretation of a character from what we expected, if it works, I'm running with it.
Absolutely. I'm like Fergus, I'm a very collaborative director and I'm interested in what the actors are bringing to a character rather than, you know, cookie cuttering them into exactly how the character should be. That said, with The Show Must Go Online, we do quite an intense research and development process, which consists of quite a long meeting, either over one day or two, where we talk about exactly how the aesthetic of the show is going to work, how certain very movement-heavy sections will work, how certain special effects would work. We sort of almost weave the net to catch the show in during that time. And then when the actors come along, you know, wonderful things start to swim into the net from the performances that they're bringing. That metaphor got away from me slightly, but I think it explains the process roughly.
That was good.
And how much is there much of an overlap between the various productions? Because obviously you've got these productions all happening in relatively quick succession to each other. Is there much production overlap?
We have a few performers who are shared between productions, but we have balanced things to make sure that they're not doing shows back to back, or if they are, it's a smaller role than a larger role, or vice versa, just to make sure we're making okay use of their time and maintaining their energy levels and work-life balance. But what's been happening is the read-through for the production next week has been happening on the day of the tech rehearsal, the dress rehearsal of the previous production. So it really is back to back, and we did all of the research and development stuff for each production back in May. So we were starting June knowing precisely what we were doing, apart from actually having the actors in the room, getting them into the room and beginning. So it is quite a tight process, but we have a wonderful producer called Matthew Rhodes based in Canada, and he has the sort of mind that makes scheduling very simple. And he's got the sort of personality that just reassures everyone that, yes, it will be okay. So we've been incredibly lucky with having Matthew on board to help us make sure that Month of Marlowe goes smoothly.
Have you worked with any of the cast members before in this? And what sort of things were you looking for from the roles that you've cast?
Some of it we were looking to defy expectations a little bit. And then some we were looking to kind of correct things that kind of people do too stereotypically a little. So any things like the Seven Deadly Sins scenes gave me a good idea of who to cast as what.
And certainly we didn't want to fall back on, you know, any stereotyping for the Seven Deadly Sins or any of the other demonic roles. And we talked quite long and hard about how best to cast those roles.
Mm.
We approached each role very much looking at this. We had so many actors apply, and we were so grateful for how many people wanted to be a part
Fantastic.
Of it was really wonderful and really quite emotional how many people wanted to be involved in this and how many people were excited about Marlowe's work. So in some ways we have had a very easy job because we had this wonderful myriad of people to choose from. In other ways it broke our hearts because there was just such an array
some
of talent
to
in
say
front
no
of us
to.
We approached each role with who is going to be best for this role and who is going to be best with this role against the other people who we've already sort of got in. And it was this mad jigsaw puzzle, as casting always is. But we've ended up with two wonderful performers who are already known to the Show Must Go Online in the Faustus and Mephistopheles role. And that's Andrew Mockler. You've got Mark McMinn. It's been really interesting thinking of Mark, who's normally quite a comedic, warm, bubbly character actor, in that Mephistopheles role. And I hope that putting someone who our audience might not necessarily expect, especially our regular audience might not necessarily expect, I'm hoping that that will add an additional element to the sinisterness of Mephistopheles.
We are sadly running out of time on this brief interview. I really want to come back when all the shows are over and have something that's a bit more leisurely and a little less rushed, so we'd not constantly watching the clock, so that I can turn this around in time to actually help promote the shows. So any final thoughts about Dr. Faustus? Tell us where to find Faustus, how to conjure Mephistopheles, how an audience member we can find you.
Faustus, as part of the Month of Marlowe, will be taking place on Wednesday, 23rd of June at 7 p.m. BST. What we'll need you to do at midnight is draw a pentagram on your floor in chalk and then head to at PSMGO Online Live on Twitter and or www.robmiles.com. And from there, you will easily be able to find the Eventbrite link to conjure your tickets for Dr. Faustus. That ticket will also get you access to Edward II, Dido Queen of Carthage, and, extra excitingly, the Marlowe Lives Cabaret on June 30th, which is a variety night showcasing some of Marlowe's lesser known work.
Please do not fill in your details in human blood, as this will break your laptops.
And all the links will be available in the show notes so that you can just click away and head straight off to the content. All that remains is to thank my wonderful guests, Emily and Fergus. Thank you very much for sharing your time. Thank you very much, and goodbye.